does that mean?
Just in straight in Europe. It's lovely to be in Cork, and I'm just so grateful to Paul for inviting me to read here tonight. Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure. The first time I was in Cork was when was my husband Barry over here was on our honeymoon. We spent our honeymoon in Benidorm, and we had 2 weeks there. And when we came, I had been to London once on a school trip when I was 17. I had never been out of Ireland before that, and this was my second trip on it. And we went to London by boat at the time too. So it was the first time I was ever in an airplane was when we went to Benidorm on our honeymoon. It was amazing. I loved it. But we came back then. We decided we were travellers then, like we had been to Europe, so we'll continue our travels now. We went down the west of Ireland and we went to Galway and we came as far as Cork. And we stayed at a B&B and we're going to try and see if we can find where it was tomorrow. It was in the centre. It was a fabulous place. It was like a 5-star hotel with just the most gracious person who owned it. And there was, I remember, silver cutlery. And I just remember being so well treated in Cork at that time. And we had a great time, didn't we, Bertha, in Cork then? And today, when I came back, and we've been all times since, but I came back today, and that friendliness is what was the same. It was a lovely warmth. Like, and a welcome. You're very sure of your welcome here, and I think that's a great asset for you, and just it's a wonderful thing for a person who's not from here to experience that lovely warmth. Even walking along the street, people acknowledge you in a very sort of a subtle way, know that you are acknowledged and seen. Beautiful. So I am, as Simon said, my name is Celine. I've lived all my life almost in the Finn Valley, apart from a wee spell in Dublin after I left school. I worked in the civil service for a couple of years before I got married. So my whole life has been there, and basically like I am a wife and a mother to 3 grown-up children, but I love the arts and I'm involved in as much of the arts as I can. I just love it. So I'll just start with the book Forged in the Stars that was published by Summer Palace Press in 2011. And I'll just start with this one because, as Simon said, I'm involved in the local newspaper at home. And working in a newspaper is, when it's good, it's brilliant. When it's bad, it's horrible. And this is about one of those incidences that weren't so good. It's called Reporter. Delete the line in the story I wrote that said, Annie McIntyre, mother of 17 and wife of Wooly Duncan, who was her neighbour, not her husband. Delete the frantic attempt to cross out the wrong name in thousands of newspapers, on shelves, in shops, waiting to be bought. Delete the lunacy of working all night long. Delete the deadlines and the storylines that did not need to be written. Delete every word that was rushed or forced or just used to fill a space. Keep the words that attempted truth and something of grace. For the women in the courts who begged me not to write their children's shame. The trembling backs of boys who swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and promise never to do it again. Thank you. This poem, we went to Rome in 2000, wasn't it? Or 2000? was, we did. And we did all the touristy things, you know, went to see St. Peter's and the Sistine Chapel, and we wanted to see the Trevi Fountain, but before we went to it, we came on it by accident. Just there it was. And even though this poem is not just about the Trevi Fountain, it's called Trevi. And maybe I should add that my dad, he died 19 years ago from cancer, so he's in this as well. Trevi. In Rome, we turn a corner. There it is, in gleaming white stone. Horses, heralds, and angels bow to rushing water. Fountains gush, and faces take in the wonder of Trevi. Did a god carve that head? That horse, did he gallop at full speed, a rider on his back, through sparkling blue waters? That couple, the middle-aged couple, the girl and boy, their backs to the fountain, throwing coins. Did they wish for anything real? My father's hands and feet were beautiful, like the hands of the guardians of Trevi, the god of the sea and his sons. His presence, the loud rushing water of the fountain. I was cowed by his wild rages, ached for his blessing. His absence, a wound on the heart, like going back to Rome, turning that corner to find it empty of the miracle of stone. That's Trevi. This is called The Dancer. It's for my cousin Anne, who actually saved me from drowning. The Dancer for Anne. You have the sea in you. Know its deep secret. When we are children on Yarn Strand, the rhythm of dance strong in you, the ocean an echo in you. We walk into the sea, walk and walk, deeper and deeper. There is no going back. The sea draws our bodies, laughs at our little waving hands. But you know the pause, know exactly when to pull us back to singing, stinging sand. Told anyone, my mother didn't realise until she read this poem. We were about 11 and 12 at the time. This is light. I've always been fascinated by the way the world changes when the sun rises in the morning, that magical thing as it creeps and then changes it. Light. Ordinary things made sacred with the light. How it would fall on a page, gentle as I read. How precious now the apples are red. The oranges, and his form, the strength of it, how it was part of the day. Their faces, the brown eyes, the way it shone on their heads, the shape of them, the evening, how loved the mountain, was reluctant to leave, then went so easy, like a falling prayer. Bartley's mother was, she's not with us any longer, her name was Annie. And I'm very lucky because it was like I had two mothers. She was a beautiful woman, an incredible woman. It's called Goldsmith. I looked for a memory of her, went through the drawers where she kept the sheets and bedclothes, the white lace, especially for weights. She stood at so many bedsides, said so many goodbyes. A rosary said her name. I did not touch it. The aprons were true. The blue one with the red flowers. She remembers herself, a child, in a dress with the same pattern, who looked at her mother's face for the last time as she boarded a train that took her to a hospital, her last home. Her telephone book was there, with its rows of neat names followed by numbers. My name was written there. Then I found it. The box, pink and gold, with two gold rings. Not her wedding ring, but a special one. A ring from someone she loved, who lived where earth and sky, tree and stone, made a place to grow. And the other ring, with a scar, where the goldsmith had added a length to make it fit. It's for Annie. This next one is called Castle Finn. Where we live in Donegal, it's just an order. It's a more or less in the middle, but close to the border, and Castle Finn is even closer to the border. A very inland place, but there's no sea or anything, but we lived on a small farm until I was 11, when my parents bought a pub. It was all within much the same area, like the small place. It was like a 30-acre farm, and of lovely land, very good land, like nice, beautiful soil, but a very simple life on the farm. But those are where my first memories come from. It's called Castle Finn. We never went anywhere. The only place we went to was my grandmother's, where we used to go there to visit and on holidays. So that was, our whole world was Castle Finn at the time. She lived at the Cross, which is about 10-minute drive away. So it was like it was Dubai. So far. Castle Finn. My country tastes of brambles and smells of honeysuckle and after rain. The mist covers her morning, lifts to reveal a shy rose deep in a hedge. Hers is the silence of long shadows, the dancing of a withered leaf. Hers the stillness of a frosty morning, a crisp kiss at the throat of the day. She is Yvonne, who can take a day that was going nowhere and give it back. She is Paddy, forever young, and Nulla on a bicycle flowing a river of auburn hair. She is Rita, who takes us to the graves in Monellan, where the Dulaps lie, their dogs buried at their feet. She is Mary cooling milk at dawn. She is Jerry who sees so much, and Tommy stacking corn. She is a field of straggling gooseberry bushes, hedged with lilac blossom, and many roomed treehouse, an orchard of pear, apple and plum. She is Debbie, the hurricane who ripped out the roots. She is the place on the road back from my last day in fifth class, where the unfamiliar ache of something unknown has no words to articulate that I want to stay at home. We left there when I was 11 and went to, my parents bought a pub in a little village called Brocka. We had never been inside a pub, we had never seen a drink in our lives, so it was a culture shock. This poem is called Pound Street, and this is our first home after we got married. I was 20, Bertie was 22, weren't he? He was 22, not 20 as well. Pound Street. The man didn't know the stones from our first home were in his digger bucket. He didn't know that these stones had sheltered our promise to be always. He could not see us in our 20s, walking up the narrow stairs to our one-room flat with its tiny bedroom and windows to our first main road. He could not see us laughing on. He could not hear us laughing when our landlord told us we were mad to get married. He did not see your hand cup my face when we knew our first child would be born. He was a man at work with stones and clay. This next one is called Luck's a Funny Thing. And it's hard to get through life without some hard things happening. I'll say it's impossible to get through life without some hard things happening. And this Luck's a Funny Thing is not my words. It was a traveller lady who used to be in Balbuffet where I worked, and she would always be, and I'll read your hand or I'll read your face or, just sort of give her money or whatever. But she used to say this thing, good luck come, bad luck go, and luck's a funny thing. The fortune teller said for 20 euro she would blow away the sadness that surrounds me and my family. Sorry, I can start that again, said it wrong. The fortune teller said for 20 euro she would blow away the sadness that surrounds my family and me. See her draw in the air of Ballybuffet, fill her lungs to capacity and blow away the uncertainty about how to be a mother, afraid of doing the wrong thing, of causing harm and the harm. Blow away the pot of beef bourguignon that fell on Sarah. Blow away the boiling kettle on the bathroom floor that Maeve crawled into on her first birthday. Blow Nulla away from the car that hit her on Navaney Street when she ran across to see the new Centra shop, hold her ragdoll body as it fell through the air to hit the bonnet, then the ground, bring back the relief of her unmarked form in a white hospital gown. Blow away all their pain, blow away the months without laughter while we waited for the scars to heal, but not the ripple of it as it bubbled from my belly, a new sensation forgotten for so long. This is called tea. My daddy loved tea, really strong tea, like loose tea, 2 spoonfuls in a cup. Tea. He loved his tea hot and strong, made with real leaves, 2 spoonfuls in a scalded mug filled with boiling water. A trace of milk faded the red. The comfort of the clink of mug on saucer, the heat on palm cradle, veins warm, sipped slowly, draining to an ancient, scarred landscape. For years, Barty and I didn't have a car. We in our early years, we walked everywhere, and even when the girls came along, but people were very kind. Like when I was out with the girls, they would get lifts, and this was one of those times. Girls. He gave us a lift in his car, my 3 daughters and me. Are they all yours? He said. 3 brown-eyed angels look at me. They're all girls, he said. I agree. Ah, well, said he. We wouldn't change. This is my grandmother who lived just a couple of minutes away. Maggie was her name. Maggie. My grandmother was a smile in a halo of woodbine, a room where I dared to believe in something more. A song of days spent cleaning carpets in the barn field. A night to hold the laughter of summer. Days spent in secret conversation. A bed dressed in white cotton. She was the light beside the fire, and she burned brighter. Blue July. I loved Amy Winehouse, and she died on the 23rd of July, which is the day before my birthday. Blue July for Amy Winehouse. I start this day without you, the first day of summer you'll never see. I dream that you are older and walking by a river. The music reaches you, but never gets to me. I start this day without you, this birthday without you. Did you hear Edith sing? Did she find your heart, tear it out, let it soar? I dream that you are running in a storm in Monticello. The trees crash around you, your face is drenched with rain. The road becomes a river, takes the music with it. Are you going home? Is the road back very long? I dream that you are falling with a man who holds your hand. The mist comes down, covers him. His face is in the space between. You look into his eyes and you are lost again. He feeds on your sorrow that fills his heart and brain. Then he gifts it back to you, opens all of your wounds again. I see you at a party on a summer night. I see your friends fear for them, for risks I'll never take, for songs I'll never sing. But they become like rainbows, arched across the sky, vanish into notes, sing this blue July. New places. To Ellis Island they carried handmade things, embroidered cloths, beaded wedding shoes, to take a step into the new world. They waited in lines to hear a new name being called. They watched as kin were marked with chalk or singled out for more questions. They walked on different stairs to east, to west, to wit. See them one with arms outstretched to relatives waiting at the kissing post. Festival, and your John Spillane gave a songwriting workshop there the year before last, I think it was. And he's from Cork, yeah. And I wrote this song at the workshop, and you're the first people to ever hear this song. This is its first airing, you know. So. So he was brilliant, actually. It was amazing what happened that day. There were about 14 of us, and there were all these beautiful young people, like they were all really young people with lovely were all from all over the world as well, like, and they were all there for the songwriting workshop, and it was me with all them. So, but that was wonderful. It was a great experience, and just great to spend a bit of time with him. He's a treasure here, I'm sure. And it's just like your five-word challenge, you know, we got everybody to write down their ideas and go away into a corner and, you know, put music to it, you know, and just have a go. And this is what I came up with. It's called Losing You. And we had probably at that stage been to the airport a few times with our girls. It's called Losing You. We've one girl in Dublin, we've one in London, and one in Singapore. So it's nice to have one in the company. The airport road was long, the sky was still so blue, the bobbing bees were humming the day that I lost you. The children were all laughing at balloons they had set free. The women stood and smiled at them the day that I lost you. Give me back our precious time, the days of sweet, sweet wine. The sky arched above us, our souls entwined. A vagrant asked for pennies, the dog wagged its tail. The lake so still, so tranquil, the day that I lost you. Yes, you took the gold, and yes, you left me blue, the color of the sky, the day that I lost you. On the blood of the saint. I had no faith in Padre Pio or his blood-stained glove, sourced in Conway. Aged leather covered the bandage that stemmed the flow from his stigmata. A gift for my father, he placed it on his heart. I had no faith in relics, holy wells or long rosaries, whispered through fingers kneeling on cold floors. My trust was in a boy who dug his father's grave alone, who joked that at his wake he did not want women in high heels crying, walking over stones, who made death a friend with all the chats we had about the funeral, who to ask to dinner, wondering who would go. It cannot be lost, must be kept safe until tomorrow when I take it back to Conroe. I carry it with me everywhere, afraid to let it out of my sight. I sleep on the blood of the saint, wake at dawn, surprised by joy. Know that nothing is lost, everything, everything is returned. I don't know what it's like here, but at home there's a lot of suicides, an awful lot. Like, it's just a terrible reality that we live with. And this poem is in response to that. It's called Threshold. Autumn leaves black on grass wet with dew. Bare trees reach the sky. morning. We all lie, stand, sit, or cry somewhere. The truth there, whether we know it or not. You embraced not knowing. The clay holds you now in a deep earth bed. Your visible days no more. Your compass set for the journey back to where you always were. Guided by light, not reaching us, but falling on the threshold. Your face, the curve of your ear, the light in your eyes when you really laugh, your voice in another room, the music of your body as words pour forth, filling the house with the sound of you. The waves crash, batter themselves against the shore, raging at your loss. Remember your white-limbed beauty, alive in your summer days. Days bright with joy and fun and happy idle things. A howling wind searches for you, calling your name over and over again. I tell the wind to calm, soothe its broken heart. See your light in every drop of rain, in every blade of grass. Sitting here just. This is called The Imagineer, and this poem is about Jean Doran, who founded, created, and this is the fourth year, I think, he's running the Beckett Festival in Enniskillen. Fantastic, you know, what he's done and then he's going with Beckett. Let's look at that. The Imagineer. Connect things, speak them into life, bring them back, the great circle, Beckett, Joyce, Wilde, Yeats, Kavanagh. Nothing is too much for a teenage boy to imagine. 20 presentations? No. 40? No. 60? No, make it 100. And let's have 40 different venues. Why one when you can afford it? Enniskillen has the only festival in homage to Beckett. While Dublin slept, Doran welcomed him to the town. Like a teenage boy, he did not see the fences, was well able to jump over, trusted the audience to hear music, understand deep melody, had faith in the Dubliner. Hears his words again, wraps them over the days that remain. Like Paul Casey here, you know, people who sort of bring things together. And this is called, this is probably my most recent poem. See, these poems have been worked on, so they're all covered with marks. This is a poem about, it's called Bonfire, and it's after David Best Temple in Derry. I'm sure you probably know where already, you know, that built this temple, and then people brought all these little things, prayers, wishes, things to it, and then they set it alight. Just a very healing, beautiful thing that he did. Bonfire. after the date of Bess Temple in Derry. The song of fire innocent calls to heaven our wild longings, our crushed hopes consumed. We come from a burning heart, sing to the gods in a world born in violence. This fleeting temple in the city holds the deep secret of fire come to life. Suddenly it makes sense, the endless longing for peace, for the father who brings his son's photograph, the mother with the poem for her child, the girl reaching out to her lover. Here at this hearth, form is sacrificed, becomes nothing again. In that nothingness lies freedom from the bone-deep loss always beside us, covering grace-filled days. If torment, grief, distress or guilt travel the road with us, if we are exiled from family, let the hunger of fire bring us home. If the burn of the bullet colored our days and our nights, take heart, because even if we remember, the not yet born will look to us for sanctuary. Share what normally divides, the burning of fires in this land, the taking of sides in this red hot rage. Will we take our bodies into the flame, heal every hurt, every loss today, not fear our certain death, but become transfigured by the light? Thank you.